Tonight, the historic summit between President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two leaders coming face to face here in Geneva. The high-stakes talks lasting just 3 hours, then dueling news conferences. The president saying he did what he came to do and that he does not believe Russia wants a new Cold War. The warning he gave to Putin on cyber attacks, but the Russian leader deflecting responsibility. Also discussed inside the room, the imprisonment of Alexei Navalny, the return of ambassadors, and new nuclear talks, and what Putin said about the Capitol riot that President Biden called ridiculous. Our team here in Geneva with full coverage. Also tonight, the record-breaking heat wave, 40 million under alerts, roadways buckling out of the intense heat. Is there any relief in sight? And the developing tropical threat we're tracking. The Delta COVID variant and growing concerns it could become dominant in the U.S., the areas most at risk, and the new message from the Surgeon General. The Biden administration's major reversal of Trump-era policy on transgender students' rights as battles rage in dozens of states. And the dire new report on the U.S. housing crisis. How long will prices soar?
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. The Biden-Putin summit. Reporting tonight from Geneva, Switzerland.
Good evening, everyone. A critical door was opened today between the USA and Russia. Whether it stays open, even President Biden and President Putin can't say. The two ending their historic summit meeting here in Geneva with vague understandings and to-do items on issues ranging from nuclear arsenals to cybersecurity, both framing the meeting and tone in terms like productive and positive. President Biden saying he wanted to establish basic rules of the road between the two nations, saying he pressed the Russian president on human rights. Putin pushing back, turning the tables on some issues. And at the end of it all, no clear roadmap from here about next steps. President Biden and Russian President Putin face to face. Their highly anticipated summit shorter than expected. Afterwards, President Biden insisting he achieved his goals at the summit he asked for.
I did what I came to do. The tone of the entire meetings was good, positive. There wasn't any strident action taken.
Each moment carefully choreographed. President Putin arriving first at the Swiss villa, followed by President Biden, pausing in his armored limousine before getting out. Then, Mr. Biden reaching out for a handshake. The two presidents never meeting alone. Secretary of State Blinken and the Russian foreign minister there, too. I hope that our meeting will be productive, Putin says.
Well, thank you. As I said outside, I think it's always better to meet face to face.
Not grabbing.
Chaotic moments as Russian media and Russian security pushed and shoved the American press. Both leaders looking on. President Biden had said he would confront the Russian leader on issues like election interference, Putin's crackdown on critics, and recent ransomware attacks on America's food and gas supply that the U.S. blames on Russian hackers. In an unusual move, President Biden not holding a joint press conference with Putin afterwards. Instead, in dueling appearances, both sides offering sometimes differing views of how it went. On cyber attacks, President Biden saying he gave Putin a list of critical infrastructure that he wants off limits, along with his sharp message.
I pointed out to him we have significant cyber capability. And if in fact they violate these basic norms, we will respond.
But no mention of that from Putin, who deflected any responsibility, blaming the U.S.
The majority of cyber attacks are made from the U.S. territory.
Both sides saying they would talk further on the matter. On jailed Putin critic Alexei Navalny, President Biden saying he gave this warning if Navalny died in custody.
I made it clear to him that I believe the consequences of that would be devastating for Russia.
But when Putin was asked about Navalny, he never mentioned his name, even comparing Russia's democracy activists to rioters at the U.S. Capitol.
People went into U.S. Congress with political demands. They are called homegrown terrorists.
That's a ridiculous comparison.
Putin saying he felt no pressure, describing their conversation in personal terms.
I can say that he is a constructive person, well-balanced and experienced. He recalled his family and conversations he had with his mother. It is all appealing.
President Biden suggesting Russia is eager to lower tensions.
I don't think he's looking for a Cold War with the United States.
While the two leaders agreed to return ambassadors and to start talks on arms control, no movement on other thornier issues.
He denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
Later, President Biden apologized for that answer and was asked again about what was gained here.
If you were in my position, would you say, well, I don't think, man, anything's going to happen. It's going to be really rough. I think it's going to really be bad. There's a value to being realistic and put on an optimistic front, an optimistic face.
All right, let's bring in Peter Alexander and Andrea Mitchell, who are both here with me in Geneva. Peter, I'll start with you. What's the White House position on how this went?
Yeah, Lester, President Biden is making the argument that he accomplished his goals on this trip, restoring America's leadership and its alliances, and that he directly confronted Vladimir Putin, saying he is not against Russia, he is for the American people. Still, this summit also revealed serious disagreements. The White House goes home unable to tout any significant tangible progress on Russia. The president says we'll see what happens, but his critics are going to hold him to a very tight timeline.
And Andrea, what did we learn about Joe Biden on his first trip as president abroad?
Well, this is the Joe Biden we knew from the Senate and from the White House. He said before heading home that foreign policy is not some secret code. It's all about personal relationships. So he let Vladimir Putin know exactly where he stands on Russian cyber attacks, on Ukraine, on Alexei Navalny. And he set down some clear lines. The only problem is, if there is another Russian hack, is he prepared to take action? And at the end of the day, he and Vladimir Putin are no closer to agreeing on much of anything.
All right, Andrea and Peter, thanks to both of you. Let's bring in Keir Simmons, who interviewed Vladimir Putin ahead of today's summit. Keir, what's the reaction in Russia?
Lester, Russian media is portraying President Putin as a statesman and the summit as historic. Television networks here praising Putin for taking tough questions at his news conference from U.S. reporters. But his answers were predictable. The same man who we met inside the Kremlin, defensive and blaming America. The question tonight, as President Putin arrives home here in Moscow, will President Biden's personal touch and warnings have any long-term impact? Lester?
All right, Keir Simmons, thanks. In just 60 seconds, the brutal heat wave in the West. When will it end? And concern increasing about the Delta coronavirus variant and why so many are still not getting vaccinated.
If you ever needed to be persuaded that bad things can happen anywhere, then take a journey with us.
From compelling mysteries to in-depth investigations, our Dateline episodes are available as podcasts.
Follow Dateline NBC now to get new episodes every Tuesday. To listen ad-free, subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com.
Great storytelling with a twist from the true crime original.
He would lie his way into their dreams.
He was looking for James Bond girls.
How fun would that be to be a Bond girl?
Then twist them into a nightmare.
This guy's done this before. He'll do it again.
Until a group of women banded together to put him behind bars and keep him there.
You have to participate fiercely, fiercely in what happens next.
I'm Keith Morrison, and this is Murder in the Hollywood Hills, an all-new podcast from Dateline.
All episodes of Murder in the Hollywood Hills are available now. To listen ad-free, subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com.
In the West, no relief from that dangerous heat wave. Tens of millions still facing triple-digit record-breaking temperatures, straining power grids and causing new drought and wildfire concerns. Here's Miguel Almaguer.
The oppressive, stifling heat wave searing the West is tonight delivering some of the most dangerous temperatures of the year, threatening to shatter nearly 200 records through the weekend. Some 40 million Americans already under heat advisories, watches, or warnings.
It's going to be extremely hot.
In California, Death Valley living up to its name, soaring towards 128 degrees. Cities like Las Vegas and Phoenix teetering at roughly 115.
The massive heat wave slamming Arizona.
After 3 days of triple-digit heat in Salt Lake City,
it's a melt-your-face-off kind of day.
Even Billings was baking at 108 yesterday. From California to Colorado, there is little relief in the forecast. The West cooking and roads cracking in the extreme weather.
Thank you for calling Generator Supercenter.
In Texas, many are buying generators, fearing the power grid that failed in the record cold may resort to blackouts in this historic heat.
In California, power companies are also urging residents to conserve power to avoid outages. Even nightfall isn't bringing cooler temperatures.
Already facing a mega drought, the West is also on the brink of another epic fire season. One disaster triggering another as it just begins to heat up. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
We're also keeping an eye on a potential tropical threat in the Gulf of Mexico. There is a good chance it will become a tropical depression by Friday. The Gulf Coast from East Texas to the Florida Panhandle could get 4 to 12 inches of rain. Tonight, America getting rid of COVID restrictions, but facing a growing threat from the Delta variant of the virus. In the U.S., just under 175 million have received at least one vaccine dose, but that's only about 400,000 more than yesterday's number. Here's Blaine Alexander.
Tonight, experts predict the Delta variant, first discovered in India, could soon become the dominant COVID strain in the U.S.
It is more transmissible and possibly more dangerous in terms of causing severe disease.
All of it only accelerating the rush to get Americans vaccinated. But the Biden administration is running out of time to hit its July 4th goal, 70% of Americans with at least one shot. So far, only about 53% of the country is partially vaccinated. But some states are barely hitting a third of their population, the lowest rates in southern states like Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi, where only 28% of the state is fully vaccinated. A new poll out today gives some insight into why the rates are lagging. 37% of those asked point to vaccine hesitancy, but nearly double that number say they faced barriers in trying to get the shot. And even as scenes like these are becoming more familiar, Dodger Stadium hosting the largest sports crowd since the start of the pandemic, still some setbacks, with a Royal Caribbean cruise ship forced to postpone setting sail after 8 crew members tested positive for COVID.
On one hand, we're seeing a number of states loosening restrictions, but on the other hand, we're hearing this dire warning about the Delta variant. Is this a confusing message?
Well, Blaine, I think what you're hearing is really a message for two different populations, which is that if you are vaccinated, you are still in good shape. But if you are unvaccinated, there's still reasons to be cautious, to still wear a mask, to still avoid indoor gatherings.
And this week, Vice President Harris will travel to Atlanta, part of the administration's focus on boosting vaccinations in the South. Lester?
All right, Blaine, thank you. You can make a plan for when and where to get vaccinated. Visit planyourvaccine.com for more. Late tonight, the House passed a bill that would make June 19th a federal holiday after it was unanimously approved by the Senate. It's known as Juneteenth, a day commemorating the end of slavery. President Biden is expected to sign the bill, establishing the holiday as Juneteenth National Independence Day. Now to our series, America the Vulnerable, and the country's digital divide. The Biden administration says broadband should be treated as essential infrastructure to help bridge that gap. But as Jake Ward reports, some states have roadblocks.
High school teacher Michelle Galloway spent months struggling to connect with students from her North Carolina farmhouse during the pandemic.
Sometimes I would cry after a class.
At times, the slow internet made it nearly impossible to communicate.
I had one student to hold up a sign saying, "Miss Galloway, ask that question again." So I wrote it out and held it up.
High-speed broadband internet needed for video conferencing has always been hard to get in rural America. because companies make less money connecting remote communities than they do cities. But Wilson, North Carolina, is an exception.
You wouldn't think that a place like this has world-class broadband speeds, but the truth is, it does. But in order to actually connect all of these houses, crews have to install fiber optic cable like these.
After a large cable company refused to partner with Wilson, the city spent $32 million to create its own broadband network, making high-speed internet a public utility here, available to anyone in the county, like gas or electricity.
We didn't just cherry-pick the most profitable or potentially profitable regions.
Only two cities in North Carolina are allowed to provide internet this way, because state law, backed by the telecom industry, now essentially forbids internet as a public utility on the grounds of fair competition. 18 other states have similar laws. But just 30 miles north of Wilson, Rocky Mount's mayor says the law is holding his town back.
We've got to have the technology to enable our resident population to live here.
Residents here say the internet offered by private companies is so slow, many go to the library for a reliable connection.
When I have to do online applications, when I have to apply for jobs or look for rental assistance.
Michelle Galloway is now connected to Wilson's high-speed network and says the issue of access could be a learning opportunity for her students.
It would be a wonderful group project. Why do 18 states take this perspective on the expansion of broadband internet?
Jake Ward, NBC News, Wilson, North Carolina.
Up next, tips on getting the home you want in a red-hot market. Back with a new report revealing the staggering scope of the housing crunch in the U.S. Stephanie Rule now with what buyers need to know.
Here, let me just show you that.
On paper, Danielle and Kristen Sills are the perfect first-time home buyers.
Our credit is impeccable. Our savings are in check. We have zero debt, but in this market, we cannot compete.
They've upped their budget and widened their search of the Boston area. But the last house they bid on had 29 offers.
It sold for about $70,000 or $80,000 over what the asking price was. And it was a 1,200 square foot home.
One of the biggest issues, the lack of homes for sale, 20% fewer compared to a year ago.
We've built fewer homes this last decade than any decade going back to the 1960s. So going into the pandemic, we were already facing a housing shortage, and it's just gotten so much worse.
A new report finds the pace of construction slowed, creating a shortage of more than 5.5 million units.
You can't just flip a switch and create more housing.
The advice for buyers, do your research on what homes really sell for, not just the list price, and know your budget and your limit.
When might we see the housing market cool down?
I think the housing market has already started to cool a bit, but it's not going to be a situation where buyers are going to get a better deal if they wait.
Competition fierce, with buyers making big life changes as we move toward a post-pandemic world. Stephanie Rule, NBC News.
A major announcement today from the Education Department saying Title IX discrimination protections extend to transgender students. That's a reversal from the Trump era. It comes as a growing number of states consider laws limiting transgender rights. Our Joe Fryer spoke with teens feeling the impact.
For teens facing adversity, we begin with a question about positivity.
Dylan, tell me, in the last year, what has brought you joy?
I know that people have my back, and that's one of the best feelings in the whole world.
A question I asked Dylan, Sam, and Phoenix, three transgender teenagers.
What brings you joy?
I'd say love and support from people around me.
Heather, do you see that happiness right now?
I can see this smile, so that's all that matters to me.
But they'll tell you joy takes time.
Finally, I've kind of been able to express myself and finally kind of get some relief.
It evolved out of the cocoon into a beautiful butterfly.
Now, mental health experts worry a recent wave of legislation targeting the trans community, more than 100 bills in over 30 states, is marginalizing kids who already face higher rates of depression and anxiety. What helps, experts say, is getting gender-affirming care, like puberty blockers and hormones.
Since starting on my gender-affirming care, my confidence and happiness and overall mental health well-being has just shot up and I'm doing so much better.
But Dylan lives in Arkansas, which is banning such care for minors.
I'm worried that all of the progress that he has made could come to a halt.
His family is now part of a lawsuit challenging the law, hoping Dylan can continue to get the care that brings him joy.
So it really opens the door to a whole world of opportunities and possibilities when you're not hiding within yourself.
Joe Fryer, NBC News.
You can see more of Joe's reporting in a one-hour special, Transamerica, streaming on NBC News Now, tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern. We want to now welcome two new members of the NBC News family, our correspondent Gotti Schwartz and wife Kimmy Tobin, welcoming their first baby, Kira Setsuko, on Tuesday. And Chief White House correspondent Kristen Welker and husband John Hughes celebrating the arrival of their first baby, Margot Lane Welker Hughes, over the weekend. Everyone is said to be doing well. Our congratulations to both families. And I'll be back with some final thoughts on this historic day. Some final thoughts before we go tonight. Until lately, by necessity, we've all been communicating from afar, and we know often that subtleties and nuances get lost or misunderstood. What we sometimes crave is proximity. In the end, that's what summits are about, proximity. We know that Presidents Biden and Putin sat down today with full understanding of the issues and the positions each had staked out. But seeing the handshake, as obligatory as it was, watching them come eye to eye, taking measure of the other, one couldn't help but wonder, could they, would they reach an understanding? Or would it be a mere photo op? There is no reason to believe that because they met, the world is any safer or any less safe than it was yesterday. Each had a version to share with reporters about their meeting today, and those words and characterizations will be thoroughly examined from all angles as we process what the lasting impact of this summit will be. Chances are it won't be earth-shaking, but perhaps it will be a lot more than just a handshake and a photo. That's Nightly News for this Wednesday in Geneva. Thank you for watching, everyone. I'm Lester Holt. Please take care of yourself and each other. Good night.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna Bush Hager from Today with Hoda and Jenna and the Read with Jenna Book Club. There's nothing I love more than sharing my favorite reads with all of you, except maybe talking to the exceptional authors behind these stories. And that's what I'll be doing on my podcast, Read with Jenna. I'll be introducing you to some of my favorite writers. These conversations will leave you feeling inspired and entertained.
To start listening, just search Read with Jenna wherever you get your podcasts.